to look for. I know Doug David very, very well. He's a lovely guy. He's put a lot of his own money into this effort to stop fluoridation. He's a dentist, of course, and he's a former past president of the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. And this is a group of dentists that have broken away from the ADA, A, because of their opposition, but largely because of their opposition to mercury amalgams, which the ADA has promoted since its formation. And more recently, they've been strongly opposed to fluoridation. So dentists are very conscious of the toxicity of the materials that they're using in dentistry. Now, as far as this movie is concerned, it's a very important document because it's the clearest communication of the corruption in particularly the EPA, which has actually made fluoridation possible. And it goes into chapter and verse on that. But I think it would be helpful for you to know what the federal agencies' roles are in fluoridation, or what they aren't. The FDA has never regulated fluoride for ingestion. Never. Either as prescription medication or as fluoride in water. So here we have the a medicine which has been prescribed more than any other medicine in American history. It's never been regulated by the FDA. The result of that is there have never been any randomized clinical trials that the FDA requires for other drugs. And secondly, the FDA is not collecting any information about side effects, which they would do for any other drug. The second agency, of course, is the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, their role goes all the way back to when they didn't exist in 1950. In 1950, the US Public Health Service endorsed fluoridation before any trial had been completed and before any significant health studies had been published. So in other words, it was political in 1950. And within a couple of years, all the major medical and dental associations in the country had endorsed fluoridation. Still no science on the table, but the government, the US government was there, and it was safer to then endorse this practice. So today, the US Public Health Service is now part of the Department of Health and Human Services. And the agency within this huge conglomerate is the Center for Disease Control. They promote fluoridation. Or rather, not the 20,000 strong Center of Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, with 20,000 employees, with all kinds of scientists and toxicologists and you name it, experts. No, it's the Oral Health Division. The Oral Health Division is only 30 people, and they're all dentally trained. And their job is to promote fluoridation. They have no expertise to make judgment on the science of the safety of fluoridation. They don't have it. And in fact, when they put out that famous statement that's quoted nearly every day somewhere in the world, that the center of the fluoridation is one of the top public health achievements of the 20th century, when that statement came out, they were 6 years out of date on the health studies that they cited. 6 years out of date. This came out in 1999, and the health study they referred to was a review done in 1993. So if this is a propaganda machine. The CDC, Oral Health Division, is into public relations and promoting fluoridation. So who's looking after safety? Well, you might think the EPA. Now, the trouble is that the EPA in 1987 or around about that time gave up any control over regulating additives to water.
What year was that, please?
In the 80s. I'd have to check the thing. Okay, now, gave up the control over regulating additives. Therefore, they have no official capacity as far as regulating water fluoridation. However, because fluoride is also a contaminant, yes, the EPA Water Division does regulate the level of fluoride in the water. Now, here's the crutch.
In the water, in the environment.
No, in the water. So it's, it has to determine a safe drinking water standard for water, okay? For fluoride, any contaminant, but in water. So the level that they determine as safe is 4 parts per million. And you're going to hear about some of the corruption that went into protecting that standard. Yes, you had a question?
Did they declare publicly that fluoride is a contaminant to the environment?
There's no argument. It is a contaminant.
But is there like documentation that they acknowledge this?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Now, okay, so what is brought out here, and I just, for the background, you're going to hear from EPA scientists who know that when that 4 parts per million standard was determined in 1986, it was rigged. They knew that that wasn't safe. The scientists that were required to say that this was safe were under pressure, and that's what you're going to hear about. It's very important.
Wow.
Very important. And I'll tell you how pathetic. This standard has existed now since 1986, 27 years. And this is the basis of saying that 4 parts per million is safe. They've only got one endpoint that they considered crippling skeletal fluorosis. Now, crippling skeletal fluorosis, when you've got so much fluoride in your bones that people that have it are bent over because their backbones are solid. So that's the endpoint. They don't consider the first symptoms of skeletal fluorosis, which is like arthritis. If they did that, it couldn't possibly be at 4 parts per million. So you start then with crippling skeletal fluorosis as the only health endpoint. They then say that you need 20 milligrams a day to get this condition. That is inaccurate. This is based upon a study of cryolite workers in Denmark before World War II. That's where the data comes from. And then they said we'll apply a safety margin of 2.5 instead of the standard factor of 10. So divide by 2.5, 8 milligrams a day is safe enough to protect everyone. In other words, you can all have 8 milligrams a day of fluoride for the rest of your life, and you're safe. You won't get crippling skeletal fluorosis. Okay, that's the basis. Now it gets worse. Now you're going to go from a safe dose, safe daily dose, to a safe drinking water standard. They said, well, the average person drinks 2 liters of water a day. So therefore, the safe drinking water standard is 4 parts per million. 2 liters at 4 milligrams per liter is 8 milligrams a day. So that's how we got a 4 parts per million. What about all the other fluoride we're getting from? Not included. What about the people that drink much more than 2 liters of water a day? So the whole thing is bogus from top to bottom. But that's the standard that we've lived under for 27 years. Now, run the clock forward. The National Research Council in 2006 produced this massive 500-page report. And what was the recommendation? What was the conclusion? The 4 parts per million standard is not safe. The EPA Water Division should do another health risk assessment to determine a new safe drinking water standard. They dragged their feet for 6 years, and then, 5 years, and then 2011, you all heard, I'm sure, big announcement, big press conference in Washington, January the 7th, where the Department of Health and Human Services and the Water Division of the EPA announced two things. The DHHS said, we're going to lower the recommended level to 0.7. Right now it's 0.7 to 1.2. We're going to lower that to 0.7, one end of the range, because we are concerned about dental fluorosis. So from their perspective, there's only one endpoint, and that's dental fluorosis, mottling of the teeth, and we want to have a level that reduces tooth decay without causing too much dental fluorosis. And the backdrop is, the CDC have conceded that 41% of American children between 12 and 15 have dental fluorosis. Way too much, right? Our kids are overexposed. So we're lowering it to 0.7, the recommended level. There's the EPA Water Division says, we are going through, as recommended by the National Research Council, we are doing we're determining a new safe level. But the shocker was, we're going to protect the water fluoridation program. We want to make sure we don't come up with a standard that doesn't conflict with the need to protect children's teeth. So it's clear that they're working hand in hand. Now that's illegitimate. The safe drinking water standard should not take into account any purported benefits of this. It should be what is safe. So politics again, and they said, and we're going to determine the safe drinking water standard, and the most sensitive endpoint, they say, is severe dental fluorosis, when it's got to the point that 100% of the enamel is imbricated. And the reason they've chosen that endpoint is that the National Research Council said that is a health effect, not a cosmetic effect. Now, I'm speaking longer than I expected to, but here's the thing. If the EPA was honest, fluoridation would finish tomorrow. If only they could be made to be honest. If only we could get a president or somebody or some powerful politicians to get the EPA to do their honest job as civil servants paid by us to do honest science, fluoridation would be over. Because if they actually determine a safe level in water to protect the health of all our people, it would have to be much less than one part per million. It would have to be down at most 0.1 part per million. And in fact, the question, if I was confronting the EPA right now, is to say, right, you're saying that severe dental fluorosis is the most sensitive endpoint? We have 36 studies showing that fluoride lowers IQ. Are you telling me that all those children in all those studies had severe dental fluorosis? Because if some of them didn't have severe dental fluorosis, then lowering IQ is the most sensitive endpoint, and that's what you should be doing your calculations on. And if you did your calculations on that, it would be lower than one part per million. It would be probably zero. So that's where we got this. So you're getting some background now on how politics keeps protecting this policy. This policy of water fluoridation, for whatever reasons, and I will go into it tomorrow, what is driving this thing? For some people, it's more important to protect fluoridation, the policy, than to protect the health of the American public. And now you can see some of the grim details behind that.
Thank you.
Okay. Afternoon, as you all know. Okay.
Thanks very much, everybody, for coming. What I'm going to do now is just show you very briefly what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow, and I hope as many of you will come and get your friends to do likewise. But Dawn has just said, I've spent 17 years on this issue, first as a professor of chemistry, specializing in environmental chemistry and toxicology, and then as a director of the Fluoride Action Network. I retired from chemistry in May of 2006, and in October of 2010, we published this book, and it felt like a huge release to put everything I knew between two covers of a book. In fact, I said to my wife, it feels like I've been constipated for 14 years, they just let me have a crack. Anyway, the major decision, I think, the best decision I've made in 17 years, was to ask these two people here, James Beck, who's a PhD MD from Calgary, Alberta, in Calgary in Alberta, a physicist, and Spedding Micklem, a biologist, educated at Oxford. So we had a chemist, a biologist, and a physicist. And they were so important because they kept the tone right. We didn't go after people, we didn't point too many fingers, but the thing was to understate, not overstate. Understate, not overstate. Too many people opposed to fluoridation, overstate the case, lose the credibility. Understate, understate, understate. You don't need very much to destroy fluoridation. But every single scientific argument that's in this book is backed up with references to the scientific literature. And I think it's very revealing that they have not come back with a written scientific response to this book after 2 years. I gave a presentation shortly after this was published in New Zealand to the New Zealand Ministry of Health. To our amazement, they produced about 20 people to listen to this. And I said at the end, look, we've done everything that you could ask from three scientists who are opposed to fluoridation. We've made the arguments completely transparent. We've documented everything with the scientific literature. Now you come back with a scientific response as to why you continue to promote this fluoridation. And if you can't produce that scientific response, then stop doing it. That's what I said to them. That was 2 years ago. I've just come back from New Zealand. It's nothing. Nothing from the New Zealand Ministry of Health. And so this time when we were in New Zealand, the challenge was made. I was on a breakfast program, national breakfast TV program. I said, I will debate any scientist, dentist, or doctor, or public health official who promotes fluoridation. I will debate them in public. Nice. Please come forward. Put up or shut up, I said. Not one. In 3 weeks of traveling from one end of New Zealand to the other, not one scientist, not one dentist, not one doctor. In fact, one dentist agreed to debate. He started to read my book and declined. Anyway, what you're going to get tomorrow, I'm going to talk about it being a poor medical practice. I'm sure you all understand that. Once you put a medicine in the water, you can't control the dose, you can't control who gets it, you're violating the individual's right to informed consent. It poses unacceptable risk. I will focus mainly on the IQ studies, the fact that it interferes with the brain. Very, very important. The thing that shocked us most is that the evidence that it actually works, that swallowing fluoride reduces tooth decay, is extremely weak. When you look at the scientific evidence, it's extremely weak, and I'll go through that. Then I'll ask that question, which I'm sure many of you want to know the answer to, is why do they keep pushing this? What is driving this phenomenon? Maybe we have a chance to talk about that in a moment. And then, talking about the better alternatives, and in a nutshell, I think the better alternative is xylitol. Xylitol prevents the bacteria that converts sugar into acid, which then attacks the enamel. The xylitol prevents the bacteria from sticking to the teeth, and they don't survive. And the beauty of this is that if a mother uses xylitol toothpaste, she not only protects her own teeth, she protects the baby's teeth. Because by killing the bacteria in the mouth, these are not transmitted to the baby. So there's protection offered to the baby. You can get it. Go to a health store, you can get xylitol toothpaste.
I'm sorry, but the thing with the teeth that the mother needs in utero? The teeth with the mother.
But no, when the baby is born.
Would you say that again?
Thomas of Maine has a xylitol toothpaste.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, so the other thing that's been tried in Wichita, Kansas, is that they've given in schools of low income, they've given the kids xylitol mints, a mint to suck in the morning and then one in the afternoon, and this has proved fairly effective. But it's education that we need, not fluoridation. We need better diet, better habits, and so on. So there are better alternatives. We can go into those tomorrow. And then finally, how we prevent the fluoridation of Sonoma County and end it in the Bay Area. And I thought that this would be a useful thing to actually go over again today. So we're doing it, I'm going to do it tomorrow, but you might be interested in some of this. So this is part six. Affecting change is like driving a nail through a piece of wood, right? The expert can sharpen the point of the nail. But the expert cannot push the nail through the piece of wood. I mean, I can talk myself blue in the face to this person that's pushing fluoridation in there, and unless there are a lot of people that she can see in the street, you're not going to stop it. So I cannot stop fluoridation. So what you need is the hammer of public opinion to drive the nail home. So if I give a talk tomorrow, and what happens is you walk out of that door and say, that lion is brilliant. He really knows the arguments against fluoridation. He convinced me, but you can't remember any of those arguments that I didn't sharpen the nail. You've got to be able to use these arguments. You've got to absorb, not all of them perhaps, but at least the ones you feel comfortable, because you have to go out and persuade your friends and your neighbors and your colleagues not to let this happen in Sonoma County. So ending fluoridation is as easy as turning off a tap at the public waterworks. All you need is a strong wrist. Someone needs a strong wrist. But to get that to happen, you have to have the political will to do it, or the political will, in this case, not to start it. I'm excited about being here because I think what you do here is going to influence Marin County, which is already fluoridated. And I think between the two of you, Marin and Sonoma counties, we're going to influence San Francisco. We had a very exciting rally yesterday, I think it was yesterday, in San Francisco, the day before, Friday, a rally, a march, and a presentation, and a lot of enthusiasm.
What was the turnout in San Francisco?
It was about 100 on the march, and I think probably a few more, 120 in the audience. But the interesting thing about San Francisco, which I love, because of my waste work on waste management, it is leading the world in waste management. It has a zero waste policy. It's up to 80% diversion. So here is my hero city, okay, San Francisco. But it fluoridates its water, which is a shock. One of the reasons it's a shock is that San Francisco has adopted the precautionary principle. And if the precautionary principle allows fluoridation, then get rid of the precautionary principle. It's a bloody useless principle if it doesn't stop fluoridation. Anyway, and to get the political wheel, we need many more people educated and organized. And that's what this meeting is about. Applause to local folks, Dorna and Carol and all the other people that have, Therese and her husband, all the other people that have worked to get to this point here. Okay. We have to end fluoridation one open mind and one community at a time. I would love for the EPA to stop this, but I'm not holding out any illusions. But I am seeing many communities stop, and that is very exciting. About an open mind, I remember this definition I heard when I was 12 years of age from my Latin teacher at a grammar school in England. He said, "The best definition of an educated person I've heard is an educated person who is somebody who can entertain his or herself, entertain a friend, and entertain a new idea." Now, it's that last thing is so powerful. You know what that means? It means that we have professors at universities with very long degrees who are not educated. And people in our bureaucracies who are very highly qualified, they're not educated because they haven't retained this open mind. They cannot dislodge themselves from the indoctrination, the paradigms of the past. And by the same token, we can also find people who've never been near a university or even a college or anything, and yet they're highly educated because they've got this open mind. And that's what we're appealing to. Okay, as far as resources are concerned, you've got this. This is probably the Bible of toxicology on fluoride. This is the National Research Council's report, produced in 2006. It's available online. You can search it electronically by words, so you get anything that you want. Now, a little bit of a word about this, because the history of this is critically important. This was the EPA, Water Division of the EPA, went to the National Academies and said, "Would you review our safe drinking water standards?" Okay? And they appointed this panel from the National Research Council. This was the first panel in American history that was balanced, that wasn't hand-picked to deliver the rubber stamp for fluoridation. Most of the studies that have been done in Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England, Canada, and the United States are rubber stamps for fluoridation. I'll give you an example. Health Canada produced a report in 2011. They got six experts to review the literature. Four of them were dentists who were pro-fluoridation. Four out of six were dentists. That's bad enough. If you're reviewing the health, for goodness sake, that means everything's biased towards teeth, nothing on animal. So this was balanced. They had three people that were anti-fluoridation on it, three people that were pro-fluoridation, and six that were uncommitted. They expected to take a year reviewing this literature. It took them 3.5. And I was the only anti-fluoridation scientist who was actually invited to present in person, which I did immediately after the CDC, the oral health director of the CDC. It was a beautiful moment. He was so incredibly boring that they were actually reading my statement before I got to the podium. But anyway, an excellent report. The trouble is, unless you're a scientist, it's pretty dense. It takes you several months to get to grips with that and follow up on the research and so on. The ADA read it in one day and said it was irrelevant to water fluoridation.
Do you have comments after that, since you are a scientist and you did read it? Do you have
I was thrilled because nearly everything that I had presented to them is discussed. I mean, they looked at everything I talked about. I think it was unfortunate that they did not recommend a new standard and left it to the EPA, which meant, you know, back to the fox to look after the chickens.
And you're cited in this article.
What's that?
Your research is cited in this.
Not me by name, but the research that I cite.
I see.
You know, the IQ studies, the bone studies, and so on. A lot of the studies is in there, yeah.
Okay, so
now this would take you a few days to a few weeks to study. Basically, this text is trying to make that dense NRC report more accessible to the public. Okay, so the chapters refer back to the NRC report. So that is useful for you. I think it's readable. We designed it so that an intelligent layperson could understand it. But at the same time, if there's a specialist out there, you've got all the references to pursue to make sure that we haven't exaggerated or whatever. Yeah?
I'm interested to read this book, but I know most of the public doesn't have weeks to months.
No, they don't.
So I was wondering, have you made a pamphlet, a condensed version with the main points in this?
Yes, you can find on our website, fluoridealert.org, you can find 10 facts on fluoride, which is a short summary. Some of the cogent points. You can also find 50 reasons to oppose fluoridation. And they too, those influence this text.
Wait,
just a second. For those, one step ahead of you in as much as for those who don't have much time, I would recommend this as your primary tool. It's 28 minutes, actually. Professional perspectives on fluoridation. My son made this shortly before he went to law school. It was his swan song. And it's 15 scientists, including a Nobel Prize winner who led the campaign against fluoridation in Sweden, 3 members of the National Research Council, 2 former employees of the EPA, who you saw today in Fluoridegate, Bob Carton of Freddie's seriously ill at this moment, and Bill Hersey, William Hersey, they were in there. A dentist, Dr. Hardy Lineback, who was the number one advisor to the Canadian Dental Association on fluoridation, changed his position and now actually apologized to his students for promoting fluoridation, is now a very powerful advocate for the opposite point of view. And myself and a few other scientists, but we go through 10 issues here very succinctly, and what I'm suggest to you, if you're under 12, you know how to go to our webpage and download this and make a hard copy. Okay, if you're under 12, you can do it. If you're over 12, you might have to struggle. So get your grandkids or your children to do it.
Or you have too much fluoride.
Yeah. Anyway, what I recommend, and maybe the organizers can do this too, is make hundreds of copies of this. There's no copyright. And then use it as a tool. Go door to door. Friends, don't try to argue with anybody about fluoridation, not straight away. Give them the videotape and say, look, you know that Sonoma County is considering fluoridation. I don't know what you feel about it. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a scientist, I'm not a dentist, I'm not a doctor, blah, blah, blah. But I've watched this videotape, and I'm very concerned about this. Would you watch it too? And then perhaps when you've watched it, we can discuss this. You can discuss it. You can do that with your dentist. You're a professional. I'm not a professional. Would you watch this on fluoridation? Oh, don't talk to me about fluoridation. It's perfectly safe. No. I know you feel that way. I just want you to watch this and tell me why I shouldn't be concerned. But, you know, respect them. Don't challenge them. Don't challenge their authority. They are very upset about this. Dentists feel very threatened. This is something that they're very proud of. They're very proud. This is their contribution to public health. This is what made dentistry into a part of medicine. It was the National Institute of Dental Research was built, that huge building in Washington, Bethesda, Maryland, was built on the backs of the fluoridation program, 1948. This is the way that dentistry gets research money on the basis of fluoridation and so on. So it's a huge plank for dentists. It's also something that the public health community is very proud of. It's very proud. This is as the CDC says, one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century. So don't go into this lightly, thinking that you're going to be embraced with open arms when you bring this up to dentists, doctors, people in public health. You, as soon as you mention the word fluoride, you're enemy of the people. As far as they're concerned. Enemy of the profession. Okay, yes, you have a question.
Two-part questions. The first is, how long has San Francisco and Marin fluoridated their water? That's part of the question. And the other part is, so what? Has there been studies about decline in tooth decay or decline in IQ or babies dying or anything?
As far as health is concerned, there's been practically no health studies. On the things which would be absolutely basic. Anybody who knows anything about the literature on fluoride would have anticipated by now that there would have been studies to investigate if there's a relationship between arthritis rates in this country and exposure to fluoride. Never been done. A possible relationship between fluoridation and hypothyroidism and some of the parts of hypothyroidism, obesity and fatigue and so on, never been done. Lowered IQ, never been done. Accumulation of the pineal gland, never been done. Alzheimer's disease, never been done. So they're not looking and assuming that the absence of study is the same as the absence of harm, which is not true. And I'll give you a funny story. In Dryden, Ontario, I was there when the chief dental officer said, because they were having a referendum a few weeks later, and I was there, I challenged him to debate, but he wouldn't debate, but they sneaked him in the day before. Fortunately, I was already there, so I went to hear him. He says, I walked down your high street today, and he says, I didn't find anybody growing horns, and you've been fluoridated for 40 years. So this gives you some idea of the extent of the health studies in Canada. They go around looking to see if anybody's growing horns. And nobody's growing horns, so we must be perfectly safe. Yes?
I have a group of friends that runs around the county passing out flyers and DVDs and things, and we're all very financially challenged, so
yeah.
If you have some sort of manner in which, through allies of yours, you can make copies to give us to pass out.
I'm sure that could be arranged. I'm sure it can be arranged.
Come to us. We've been doing that already.
Okay.
Yeah. And incidentally, I should tell you, we have a bequest, or someone gives you money. Someone has given us money. If you'd like to nominate one per person, if you'd like to nominate a decision maker of some kind, or even a journalist, who you feel should get a copy of our book, we can arrange to have it sent to them for free. Okay, so you just have to send...
Goran?
Oh, yeah. That's the supervisor.
Yep, yeah. So you work it out amongst yourselves.
Okay.
Let me know.
Okay.
So
I'm going to step up and I'm going to ask, this is your part of the evening now, the day, is I want to give this back to you so we can give a strategy a little bit. Let me get this...
I haven't finished it.
Sorry.
Okay. Almost.
I would like to answer the man's question, though. Marin County, 1972, they started by a vote, which I don't recommend we do here. And San Francisco is the earliest. Isn't it like the 50s?
I think it might be.
San Francisco has been doing one of the longest in the nation. I forgot the exact date, but it's one of the longest in the nation.
So as far as the science, you can also get the science spelled out for you in Fluoride Alert. That's our website. If you go to the top, there's a button that says researchers. If you click on researchers, you will get to a health database, which my son again put together. And it covers 14 tissues. So fluoride and the kidney, fluoride and the bone, fluoride and, you name it. And all the literature is available, ready to get. Okay, make it easy for yourself. And that's the health database. And Michael did something else which was important. He got translated 46 of the Chinese studies, translated to English to make them available to Western researchers, because they're doing a lot of work on this in China. So how can councillors deal with pressures from the dental lobby? If you start to put pressure on the council and you have another meeting, it will be, they will send such a posse of dentists and doctors and pediatricians and state officials who will intimidate the council or the commissioners or whatever you are. They will intimidate them. They say, we are your doctors, we are your dentists, we tell you this is the best thing since sliced bread. Don't you trust us? Aren't you concerned about your children? Aren't you concerned about poor children? Poor children.
Real. I mean, here we're at the Board of Supervisors meeting February 26th.
They did that.
Yeah. These people know this.
Okay. Yeah. And it's crocodile tears, because if they were really interested in poor kids, 80% of dentists would be treating them. 80% of dentists do not treat children on Medicaid, dental treatment for Medicaid. So anyway, here is the response to that. You've seen it in operation. What you prepare your counselors with is this. You ask these promoters of fluoridation to produce one dentist, doctor, scientist, or public health official from North America who will defend the case for fluoridation in a public debate with me. And I promise I will come back to debate that person if they can find them. But the point is, you're trying, their approach is, look at me. I have a white coat on. I have all these degrees. Yeah. I know about this issue. And they are persuasive. This counselor is a butcher, baker, or candlestick maker. He's not a doctor or dentist. They are naturally intimidated by this authority. So what you've got to train the counselors to do is say, well, that's very nice, Dr. So-and-so. You seem to know a lot about this, but quite frankly, I'm not a specialist. Are you prepared to debate this? I'd like to hear you using these persuasive arguments when there's somebody in the room who can offer the counter-argument. Are you prepared to do that? They're going to say no, and that immediately undermines their credibility. They sound good, but they won't defend their position in public. If they do, if they agree to it, that's a win-win situation. That's a victory.
So a town hall debate.
Any dentists who have stuck their neck out? Are there any dentists who have stuck their neck out?
Yes. I think I've debated six people.
Anti-fluoride, sorry.
There's 4,000 anti-fluoride dentists.
I debated six people in 17 years. One was a Marine in Scranton, Pennsylvania, was not going to be told he was scared. He was a legislator. I debated a veterinarian in Victoria, Australia. I debated a professor of dentistry in New Jersey. And all he said on the health issue, he says, I don't know the health literature, but if the CDC says it's okay, that's okay for me. Well, that was honest, but okay. And I debated a dentist recently, you can watch it on YouTube, in Phoenix, Arizona. At least he had the guts to debate. It's a good debate. I think you'd find it interesting. That was last year, June, I think, of 2012. And also, there's another debate out there with Professor Michael Lennon. He was the chairman of the British Fluoridation Society. Pretty influential. I debated him on the Isle of Man, so you could look up that too. But that's about it. That's about it. Yes, in the back.
So, as many people in the room that I know have as well, we've spent a lot of time trying to influence local government.
Yep.
And it shames me to say it, but I think that our efforts should lean towards mounting a lawsuit, because that's really all they understand. I'd like to know a little bit more about what supposedly binds them in terms of state law, because we've heard that line before.
Yep.
And when we actually, you know, didn't listen, did our own homework, we found out that they were, we call that,
yep.
they are lying.
Yeah. I strongly suggest, first of all, I know nothing about the law, so don't come to me for the lawsuits. I'm relying on my son for that. Now, what I would say this, your first task is to educate the people. You need masses of people educated. And the reason that you may not have much traction yet is they don't see many people concerned. They really don't. You've struggled to get 1,000 people to sign a petition. Until those councillors see that this is a mass movement, that there's a lot of people out there, we represent votes. In the other direction, they represent money and influence on the other side. So the only thing that we've got is masses of people. But that's why I'm talking about videotapes and knocking on doors. That's
signs,
what you've got to do.
Banners.
Yeah. And if you fail, then you start talking about lawsuits. Okay, let me finish this off and then we can open up the discussion. So you might be interested in the communities that are ending fluoridation. These are the communities that have stopped fluoridation so far this year. There are more. Smithfield, Missouri. Conclory, Australia. Olivehurst, California. Plumbers Lake, California. Australia again. Bundaberg. Balsam Lake, Wisconsin. Cairns, Australia. Windsor, Ontario, that was a big one. South Burnett, Australia. North Burnett, Australia. Doomadgee, that's an Aboriginal community in Australia. Biancourt, Quebec. And Tablelands region, Australia. Okay, so there's just some of the towns which have stopped already. We're only into March. Now, if we go back, in 2008, 19 communities over 950,000 people stopped fluoridation. 2009, 4 communities over 140,000. 2010, 8 communities over 129,000. 2011, big year that, 33 communities over 1.9 million. 2012, 26 communities over 780,000. And already this year, 45 communities over 800,000 people. So since 2008, 4.6 million people have been liberated from fluoridation. And when I started in 96, it was much more difficult to stop communities that had already started. We could keep it out. We got many victories of preventing fluoridation going in, but it was very difficult to get to oppose the status quo. So that is beginning to change, and you should be heartened by that. Yes?
What was the other county in California besides Plumas, and what year? Because I'd like
Olivehurst.
To know.
Olivehurst.
Olivehurst.
It's a town.
So we
but apparently those two are tied.
Yeah, they're tied. Yeah, yeah.
So we can get...
Yeah, you should contact those people and see what
that's
technique
right.
they use. Yeah. Hopefully you will add Sonoma County
yeah.
to the... The list.
Yes.
So that's it. Now let's have a general
okay.
discussion on tactics. We've got a brainstorm, and every idea is valid, right?
Yes.
Every idea is valid, but the task, as I see it, is how do you get a mass movement? How do you get a large number of people? Can we get links to the people that are opposed to GMO foods, the labeling, you know, that Proposition 37. A lot of people were mobilized for that, and I can't see any problem with them joining up with us.
Makes sense.
I would like to talk to the Sonoma County Library and add this video for the Sonoma County Library system. There are a lot of people who will take that video.
We need to get a good copy of this DVD. I will talk to David. We'll make sure that you get first class hard copy. And then, is there anybody that has the technology to mass produce? You do? There we go. Let's mass produce this thing. It's powerful, isn't it? Powerful.
I have a process question. As far as I know, you're from Marin, right?
No.
You're local.
I'm from here. I was a city council person in Runner Park in 92 to 96.
Well, the question I just want to ask is, people are going to give a bunch of ideas, and I think they're going to expect someone else to do them.
I know.
And my understanding is we don't really have a group
We don't yet.
That's taxed. So,
that's why we're here today.
So some of these ideas people can do themselves, or the question is, do we want to form a group? To me, that's a structural question.
We need, we need to form a group.
No. Okay. We'd like to form a group, and if you do, then is it all right to contact you, and you've left us information, and we'll start having regular meetings, and I will start having them.
Yes.
Is that good?
Yes.
Just in case we run out of time today, know that we're going to have more. So the number one thing, hold on, Elaine.
You're very polite.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
What really helps people is when I'm curious what your passion is, where did all of a sudden you get all this passion? What happened?
Like a passionate person.
No, but what was it that you found out that,
well, first of all,
you're telling the story that, you know, this is that my daughter had friends.
My story? Okay.
Yes,
my story. My 16, 17 years ago, my wife put a bunch of papers on my table and said, dear, gave me a cup of tea. I should have been suspicious. She says, will you read these? And I said, what is it? And she said, fluoridation. I said, take that away, these people are crazy. I had fallen victim. And when I started to read, quite frankly, I was embarrassed. And that kind of galvanized me, that I had been so wrong for so many years in my perceptions. But the two facts that really struck me when I was reading this thing, Emsley in England had put a paper which showed that fluoride interfered with the hydrogen bond. Now, as a chemist, sodium fluoride is not a reactive substance, okay? Fluorine is the most reactive element in the periodic table. It reacts with everything you can think of. And I thought, in my innocence, that the opponents of fluoridation had confused fluorine with fluoride. That's like confusing chlorine gas, which is very poisonous, with common salt, sodium chloride. When an element combines with another element to form a compound, the properties dramatically change. If that wasn't the case, we wouldn't have chemistry. We couldn't function on 100 different things called elements. We have to make these thousands and thousands of things called compounds. So sodium fluoride is unreactive. What shocked me is how active it is biologically. The first opponents of fluoridation were biochemists who had used fluoride to poison enzymes. And now we know it interferes with G proteins and so on. So you don't want fluoride anywhere near your body. That was the first thing. The second thing, which to me is still the most powerful, is the level of fluoride in mother's milk. Now, if you've ever done biochemistry, you have an enormous respect for nature, for the construction of life is just unbelievable. I mean, we'd have to have an area of California to begin to recreate what is going on in our bodies if we did it with chemistry as opposed to nature. She is incredible, and she's been doing chemistry for millions of years to perfect what we have. So the whole notion that Monsanto could come along and start messing around with genes, give me a break, you. You're pygmies, you stupid, evil pygmies, Monsanto. You shouldn't just pass Proposition 37. You need to pass Proposition 38, which is to eliminate Monsanto from the face of the earth. Okay. Now I'll tell you what I really think. So, what really got me going was the level in mother's milk. The level of fluoride in mother's milk, baby's first meal, meant to be the ideal mix of nutrients for healthy development, is 0.004 parts per million. In other words, a woman that bottle feeds her baby in a fluoridated community is giving her baby 250 times more fluoride than nature intended. In my view, that is reckless. It's arrogant. You think that a bunch of dentists in Chicago called the ADA knows more about what the baby needs than evolution, than nature itself? No way. And I stick to that today. Ask anybody that's a promoter of fluoridation, if fluoride is so good for babies, so good for children, why is it so low in mother's milk? They have no answer. But you know, I did get an answer. I got an answer from Dr. Robert Hall, the Chief Health Officer for Victoria, Australia. He said, so Mother Nature has dealt some children a raw deal. Meaning the children that had been born in a non-fluoridated community. Give me a break. Yes, I want to get the questions from people who haven't asked.